Mike joins me for this episode, and we start in the only place that makes sense, the only place that one could start on an NBA draft podcast, and that's with the trade. I'm calling it the trade because, and I don't think it's hyperbole to say this, the future of the Eastern Conference, and who knows, maybe the NBA, potentially hinges on the outcome of this 1-for-3 swap, the Philly-Boston trade. After a healthy time discussing Ainge's motives, how far possibly could Colangelo push this, who might Ainge take at 3, we move on to profiles for Luke Kennard and Frank Jackson. I'm Sean Darenthal, your host, and this is Ode to Odin, the NBA Draft Podcast. Okay. Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Doing good.
This draft is already so exciting. I am so pumped. I said earlier on Twitter that this draft is already the best draft of all time, and it hasn't even started. And by that, obviously, I don't really mean anything that has to do with the talent, although I think the talent is probably above average, not like a crazy draft, but above average, I think, especially like at the top. There's going to be some good players, some solid starters. But really, obviously, what I meant was this Boston-Philly trade is insane. Paul George rumors are everywhere. Obviously, there's going to be some draft picks involved in that if something happens before the draft or on draft day. Definitely, if something gets, obviously, if someone's picked afterwards and you know they're traded for Paul George, that could be really exciting as well. There's so many rumors. Today, before we taped, David Griffin from Cleveland, obviously, he's out. Not that that has a ton to do with the draft, but I thought he was always really good at using draft picks for trades. Anyway, there's like tons of intrigue in basketball world right now, and we haven't even gotten to Thursday yet, which I'm so freaking excited for. I hope that everyone listening to this podcast feels kind of prepared, or at least more prepared than they would have been. I know this year has just been awesome for me. Really, really digging into this in a really great way, meeting a ton of people, having Mike on all the time. You're great. Having odetoodin.com, you and Ben Rubin posting some stuff was really cool to read a lot of that stuff, just to have a ton of cool guests. So thank you to everybody who's been listening. It means a lot to me. I know, like, I don't make any money from this. Hopefully, maybe I can make a tiny bit or something to justify to my wife the time that I spend. But anyway, just a big shout out to everybody who listens to this podcast, who's given ratings and reviews. I really, really, really appreciate it. So, all right, let's get into this. We're going to break down the trade. And we'll just call it the trade because I think that's it's noteworthy enough probably just to have that name. Then we're going to talk about some Duke boys today. We're going to talk about Luke Kennard and Frank Jackson. So, Mike, I'm going to lay out the details for you. Then we're going to go back in time to Friday and just talk a little bit about our initial impressions. So here are the final details. And you probably know this already, but just to lay this down and be really clear about it. So Philly and Boston swapped picks, basically, plus another Philly pick. So Philly is going to get the number one overall pick. Boston gets the Lakers first rounder next year. And Philly's number 3. If that Lakers pick is number 1 overall or below pick number 5, so 6 or greater. It's harder to say like lower or greater. I always say lower for like the higher number, but it's a higher number, so it should be greater. Anyway, if it's 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, blah, 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 then the Celtics will receive the Kings 2019 pick or the Sixers 2019 pick, whichever is the better of the two, unless that pick, the better of the two, the Sixers or the Kings, unless one of those two picks is number 1 overall, then the Celtics get the worse of the two, right? So basically they're barred from getting number 1 overall next year from the Lakers pick or from either the Sixers pick or the Kings pick in 2019. And next year, they can't pick below 6, basically. This is remarkable. The fact that in this new CBA, the picks that you own that you don't control, basically that are somebody else's picks that you've acquired, the fact that you can protect those, I think really, really made this deal happen. Really quick before we get to Mike's impressions, I just want to say there's this concept that like in a vacuum, you should trade for like perfect value and blah, blah, blah. in a quantized world where there aren't like perfect decimals of everything, you know, like if Mike said like, hey, Sean, here's this apple, it's worth 69 cents. I can give him 69 cents. If he said that this is worth 69 cents and there were only dollars and quarters, I could only give him 50 cents or 75 cents, right? So I would have to overpay or Mike would get screwed and lose out on 19 cents. In basketball, that's more what it's like. There aren't like perfect trades, value for value, and pick protections are kind of the avenue that make it a little bit easier to find more acceptable value because, you know, there are basically degrees of when you can get it and when you can't and blah, 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 all that stuff. It's still not the exact value for value, but pick protections make the world go round, basically, the NBA trade world go round to some degree. Okay, Mike, Friday, the rumors came out, Woj, Stein, Lowe, they're all dropping bombs. What was your initial impression of kind of the Twitter speculation of what the trade might be? And kind of where was your line in the sand where you said, no, that's too much for Fultz?
Too much for Fultz. I think it's pretty good. I think if it was the Kings pick and the Lakers pick, that would definitely be probably too much. But definitely with the protections of number one, I think like the consensus now is that everybody thinks Philly won this trade. And I think it's definitely like a safer trade for them. But I'm pretty high in the 2018 class. So I think there's a way definitely Boston could win this trade. It's very risky. And, you know, we don't want to judge trades like we were talking about earlier. We want to judge the trade before it happens, not like, you know, the results of it.
Right.
But I think it's pretty even for me. I don't have like a strong opinion that Philly killed him or robbed him like a lot of people are saying, or that Boston or if Boston robbed him, nobody's really saying that. But I think it's fairly even, actually, even though it's very risky for Boston, though. They could definitely, you know, end up in a bad spot.
Yeah. So there's an interesting article on Reddit a few days ago that I saw, like NBA Draft Reddit, where some stats guy looked at the statistical difference between different picks in the drafts. And basically he said there's not a ton of difference between one and three. Like the difference isn't significant, which is a statistical term just to say like the difference between the two, like the averages, it's well within the realm of possibility that it could just be like random, right? That difference is due to randomness and not like the fact that they're actually better. Well, I don't think anybody really believes that necessarily. But the point is that the historical value of those two slots, one and three, is like closer than you might think. And I take that for what it's worth. I don't have ESPN Insider, and I didn't read Kevin Pelton's piece. Apparently, he's done a ton of math to try to take the trades over time and apply values, like trade values to picks, much like kind of the NFL has this book, and I'm forgetting the name right now. Some listener is going to remind me what it is. But they basically, like, so many trades happen that they have, like, this value book, basically, where they can go and they can kind of, that's where you kind of start negotiations. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make here is that apparently in this Pelton piece, I haven't read it, but I heard that strictly by the numbers, Boston technically won this trade with more value. Of course, you have to price in, like, we know who's there, right? So do we think that Fultz is greater than the average number one overall pick? Like, does he provide more value than that or not? I think that probably he does, looking back at other number one overall picks. And, you know, there's some, like, Oluwa County, like, the Clippers probably should never have picked him. The Wizards probably should never have picked, I'm totally blanking, who was it that they picked?
Kwame,
thank you. They probably shouldn't have picked him. Like, you know, there are a few things in there that are kind of messing with just like the pure calculated value of these picks. But I do think that Fultz like is probably above value on average for the number one overall pick. But so just talking about kind of like where I was kind of on the line initially, I was totally fine with giving up both of those picks. I was arguing at the time like, you have to protect at least one of them, like top one overall. I was fine giving up those two picks. I was probably even fine throwing in Philly's 2019 overall pick. I think because that time, by then, 2 years from now, I think you expect the Sixers to have made like a decent leap in the standings, right? Like, sure, it might be like late lottery, but I don't think we're talking about a top five pick anymore, probably. So I was actually fine with three number one overall picks. And here's really the rationale, is because I thought that the fit that Fultz provides is so, so good, right? Like, unbelievably good, because we already, like, we have Ben Simmons, who's a bit of a fit issue, right? Like, he's an extremely talented player, very rare for his size and, you know, his passing ability, obviously, but he can't shoot. So you have to have shooting around him, and you have to have other people who can guard the ball. You know, you have to have other 3-and-D guys around him, and preferably somebody who has some creation upside. Well, Fultz potentially could be all of those things. The D, obviously, is a big question mark here, but I think he's a great fit. There have been some people, Dean DeMarcus for one, a few other people that have been talking about this fit of these three. What do you think about the fit? Is it as perfect as I'm kind of making it sound?
I think it's a good fit. I think you're right. And looking ahead to the 2018 and 2019 draft, there's not a lot of, because the Sixers' main weakness is shooting from the backcourt. Right. Like, I think we talked about this in the past podcast, and Fultz obviously provides that to a great extent. And I love Colin Sexton in 2018, but he's not necessarily known for his shooting. He's more somebody like a playmaker with the ball in his hands, like a shot maker, not a, you know what I mean, not a knockdown shooter type. And 2019 is pretty weak on guard play so far, at least. Obviously, we won't know for a while, but yeah. So I think you're right. That's, he's definitely a great fit. And not only that, but if Simmons or Embiid, God forbid, something, you know, they don't work out for whatever reason, he's the type of guy you could start building around with him, with just him, you know, if those two don't work out for whatever reason. So I do think it's a great fit, and that's why I think even if I would agree with Pelton's conclusion that maybe, like, by the percentages and average pick values, Boston maybe got a little bit better of a value, I think it's a good trade for Philly, definitely.
Yeah, I think so, contextually, yeah. it just makes so much sense for them. Sure, like, if they overpaid a little bit, I'm totally fine with it. And to the, like, to the fit issue of these three guys, Embiid, Simmons, and Fultz, look, anytime you have high usage guys on the same team, you're not going to maximize any of their value, or maybe you maximize, like, one of their value, right? Like, LeBron James, he's the best guy. So eventually in Miami, they realized, let's just give the ball to LeBron. Everyone else takes a bit of a step back. I mean, there was an argument all this season about Curry or Durant. And when things weren't going super, super well, like they were in the playoffs, there was argument about usage percentage and how many shots either should be taking. Steph and Durant, super high usage guys, they're going to overlap a little bit. So, like, the fit isn't perfect. And I think Simmons, his fit is, like, just more difficult because he can't shoot, right? So, like, it becomes a little more problematic. And the fact that you, like, the two guys that you already had, Embiid and Simmons, are technically big guys. Simmons obviously can play on the perimeter, but defensively he's not going to be able to guard twos very well, I don't think. So anyway, I think, like, for how they were already limited with Simmons and Embiid, adding Fultz is a great add, like an amazing add. So I think for them, overpaying, even to, like, what I said before, was totally fine. Now, the fact that they didn't, right, the fact that they only basically gave up one other pick plus number three is really interesting to me. Now let's take a look at it from Boston's side. Ainge had a press conference today. He said a bunch of interesting things. Why do you think Boston did this? What is Ainge's thought process here?
I think maybe he doesn't see Fultz as a, like, big star, and maybe doesn't value him super much higher than whoever they're looking at number three, which we could talk about in a little bit. But and also, I think 2018, like I said, I'm pretty high on that class, and I think they might be feeling the same way. They could potentially end up with the first and second pick next class. I mean, Lakers have had the second pick for 3 years in a row now, so if the lottery continues that way. And, you know, Brooklyn, I don't know if they'll be the worst team in the league again, but, you know, they're going to be down there in the standings again. So they could end up with, like, Luka Doncic and Michael Porter or something like that. You know, whoever emerges from that class. You know, there's a lot of bigs in that class, but Boston actually needs bigs. They don't mind getting bigs. So they're not one of, like, Philadelphia, where they don't, you know, they can't take on any more bigs. So, I think it could definitely work out pretty damn well for Boston. Of course, I read this, somebody tweeted out, I think, how it could go bad. And if the Kings pick is, like, number one, and then the Philly pick is, like, number 15, so they end up trading number three and number 15 for number one, that would be pretty bad for them. But, you know, like I said, it's a risky pick, but... yeah, it could be worth it.
Yeah, I mean, the odds of Lakers getting the number one pick next year are at best 25%, right? So I think they're still pretty safe that they're going to get, like, a top five pick next year. you know, or 2 through 5 or whatever. But yeah, like, so the fit incentives that Philly had, Boston obviously doesn't have, right? They don't necessarily have some great young core that they need to build around perfectly. They just need to add good pieces and whatever that is. I think it was so interesting that Ainge was talking about in his press conference. He said something about the player that we're going to get at 3, we think is like just as good as Fultz, basically. Or maybe he even said something about being better. I don't know. I don't want to misquote him. But I praise both guys here, Colangelo and Ainge. If Ainge really does like value the top like 3 or 4 guys, probably just like maybe 3 guys, maybe 4 guys, but let's just say 3 guys. If he values them all about the same, of course, like why wouldn't you trade down to 3? Now, Philly is probably the only other team that they're really, really interested in that has the kind of assets that can trade for that, right? So it seems to me like in my scenario where I'm saying like I'm willing to trade 2 of these super valuable picks, maybe even 3 of these super valuable picks for it, that Ainge has all the leverage here and that he could have gotten more out of Philly. Like it seems like there was more value to be had, even kind of counting Pelton's analysis and this other great guy on Reddit who I'll probably link somewhere or give him credit for it. I don't want to just like cite him without any credit right now, but you know, despite like the absolute mathematics of it, it seems like he had a ton more leverage and could have probably gotten more out of it, but he didn't. So it means that Colangelo had some restraint, which, you know, is good to see, I guess, right? That he wasn't willing to go like all in, although I would have been fine with it and probably thought it would have been okay. But that Ainge said this, he said, okay, probably like I could get more value out of Philly. But there's nobody else like negotiating against, right? There's no bidding war. It's just Philly basically. And, you know, we have 3 guys or whatever, so we can only go as low as 3 or maybe 4, but Phoenix probably doesn't have the kind of assets that we're looking for. So, you know, he just said, while maybe I could get a better deal, like I think that this is worth more, blah, 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 to Philly because Fultz is so valuable to them. I'm just going to take the best deal that I can. I think so often in basketball, like GMs are scared of looking bad or whatever, and they don't just like go with the purely economic sense of just like the sunk cost, right? Like if I'm already kind of screwed, like just take the best value that I can and get away with it. Because so many times they don't do that because they don't want to look bad, and they end up getting no value because they let a player walk or whatever the scenario is, right? They end up overdrafting a player or whatever it is. So I think that's really, really interesting. Okay, now let's speculate a little bit, okay? Who do you think this guy is that they're waiting for at 3? Do you think it's Jackson? Do you think it's Tatum? Do you think they think that maybe Ball could fall to them? Like I just don't see them like banking that Ball could fall to them. I don't know who else. Do you think maybe Dennis Smith Jr.? Who do you think it is that they're so willing to kind of come down for that they think will still be there at 3?
Well, obviously the rumors right now are Tatum and Jackson. But one thing I know about Danny Ainge and his draft philosophy is he loves guys that are athletic, can get to the rim, and have defensive intensity. That's how I knew he was taking Jaylen Brown last year. So I wouldn't be surprised if he takes Fox. Only thing is Fox hasn't had an official workout with them, so that's why I'm not as sure about that pick, because I was with Brown. Smith had a workout with them, so maybe him. But I know, like I said, Ainge really loves guys that could really get to the rim a lot and could really like have defensive intensity and athletic ability on that end. So, I mean, Smith is athletic, but we know about his defense. So that's my surprise pick is Fox. Obviously, I know you probably wouldn't agree with that, but I'm not even saying because I like Fox, but just from Ainge's, because how I know his philosophy is. But yeah, the 2 like main candidates would have to be either Tatum or Jackson.
Yeah, those are the rumors. I like, based on what you described, and going back and like watching all of these Duke games for Kennard and Jackson, I realize like why I have Tatum like low-ish, right? Why I have him like in that 6 through 8 tier with Nilikina and Collins in my little rankings. I don't see it. But like, okay, it's possible that Ainge is there, but based on what we know of Ainge, it seems like that's probably not the guy. I could definitely see Josh Jackson because of his motor, hard nose, blah, blah, blah. But like you said, he doesn't like get to the rim all that well. Fox is interesting. I'm glad I asked you this question because I hadn't thought about Fox for 1 second. But you're totally right that he fits that kind of stereotype. Right now, it's dangerous, obviously, to do this stereotype thing. And we're not saying that, you know, we know exactly what he looks for because we don't. But that is definitely interesting to like bring his name up and think about that, because there is a logic there. I don't know if it's right or not, but there is a logic. The guy that I was thinking of was Dennis Smith. I wouldn't at all be surprised if he did. Now, if he values like super high character guys, blah, 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 I don't know if that's true or not. And I'm sure they've done their research, and if they think that the intangible stuff is not a concern, then he seems like the guy there at three for them. If, you know, if we are taking to the stereotype that you were talking about driving and super athletic guys, all that stuff, I would actually love to see them take Smith, if only because I think that, like, is there a better nurturing kind of atmosphere for him, right? It kind of maximizes what he's going to become, like, if he's going to put in the effort and all that kind of stuff. The scenario is just perfect for it. The situation couldn't be better. So I'm kind of hoping that's the pick, just for my own selfishness. Josh Jackson seems like the most probable pick to me. But also, I think it would be interesting if they have like top three guys, right? And the Lakers take Jackson or they take Smith or something. I would also kind of love to see Ball in Celtics green. Just, I don't know. I think him there would be very, very interesting in how they like to play. I think he'd be really good there, to be honest. I think you also might be able to maximize him, although it would be a little bit funny, right, that he's like Lakers bound and that he might go all the way across the country to Boston. But all right, any more thoughts on this as I've just been rambling? I think it's just so interesting, so many interesting angles. It's a huge trade. I tried to go back and find if there's like a historical precedent to trade the number one overall pick kind of before the draft, but after the lottery, and I couldn't find one. Now somebody's going to like say, oh yeah, it happened in blah, 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 92 or whatever. But I don't know. It's so interesting. Is there anything else? Anything else we didn't really touch on, or any thoughts that you had while I was rambling?
Real quick with Smith, because, you know, I'm not a big fan and I'm writing this huge article how Fox is bad, better and everything. But I do think in Boston is like the one perfect place for him in the lottery that I think he could get optimized and kind of like maybe get humbled a little bit as he sits on the bench behind Isaiah Thomas, at least for his rookie season. And, you know, with Brad Stevens and their culture, I think that would be a great place for him. And obviously that would kind of make me look like I was wrong because he would work out that way. Right. But I still want it to happen because I always root for guys to work out no matter what. Even if I'm not a huge fan of Smith's game right now, I do hope he's able to optimize his talent and everything. So, I actually don't think that would be a bad pick despite not being a huge fan of Smith's.
But you would still take Fox in that scenario, just to be clear.
I think it would be a great situation for Fox also. But yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. Let's move on. Super interesting. Yeah, I can't wait to see who Boston takes. Honestly, now that's the thing that I'm most interested. Well, I guess the Lakers at two still has a little bit of intrigue, but I think we all kind of think that it's going to be Ball. But yeah, the Celtics at three now is so interesting. Whether that is packaged for Butler, George,
hope not.
Yeah, whoever.
I hope it's not packaged. That would kind of not be interesting to me, at least, because I don't know. It just seems boring to me, and I don't think it would take them anywhere really. But whatever.
Oh, one quick question. So, did this make you think like, hey, Danny Ainge? Okay, look, we all know about his checkered draft history. That's fine, whatever. But did it make you think that? Did it make you step back and think, is Fultz as good as I think he is? Because I have said many, many times that there's a giant gap between him and number two, whoever you think that is. Now, like, I spent maybe 24 hours like, oh, shoot, did I mess this up? Like, did I just put myself in this narrative and just confirmation bias, like, after confirmation, like every evidence I saw, you know, I just kind of reinforced my own bias. Was I objective enough on this, right? And I went back and I was like thinking, I still definitely land on the side that I think Fultz is the number one over guy, and then I think there is a gap there. But like, I'll be honest, like, I'm a little more uncertain than I was. Do you still feel that way?
I've been saying though that Fultz, I'm not like super saying he's like got great superstar potential and he has a like huge gap. Like, I have him in the tier by himself at number one on my board, but I'm not like super like huge on him, like he's the next superstar and whatever. So it pretty much, like, I wasn't surprised by this trade. Like, it pretty much went with my line of thinking from the beginning anyway.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Yeah, I wonder, where do I really actually project him to be? Like, I definitely...
Because because Fultz, you know, he depends a lot on his mid-range shot, and you know, their spacing was poor, and he didn't have a lot of, you know, help, obviously, so it was tough kind of for him to get to the rim against better defenses. But still, he didn't get to the rim against better defenses a lot, and he kind of had to settle for mid-range shots. So maybe, probably because of his team, but who knows? You know, there's he definitely has some, you know, I wouldn't say he's gonna bust or anything, but he might not become like a huge star or anything. Might be just like another pretty good starter or something like that. I wouldn't be super surprised by that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Cool. Yeah, interesting. All right, I'll have to think more about that. All right, let's get to Kennard and then Frank Jackson. We're going to do like the normal breakdowns. It'll be a little bit faster because we have two guys, but I actually loved watching these games. It was good watching prospects. They're on the same team, right? It was a little more efficient, although I watched a lot more than usual. I tried to watch as many Duke games as I could. And Duke, as frustrating as they are, just kind of like this your turn, my turn stuff, like I started to see a little bit more of the nuances in their offense. I started to understand a little bit more of the nuances in their defense. I got to see a little bit of a Harry Giles. Like I started appreciating, who is their bad boy? I'm blanking so hard. Help me out, Mike.
Grayson?
Thank you. I started appreciating Grayson out of the pick and roll. He actually has decent vision out of the pick and roll. That's neither here nor there, obviously. But anyway, I'll just say that I had fun watching these guys and that my opinion of both of them has actually risen a little bit, I think, a little bit. All right, so let's get to Luke Kennard, sophomore out of Duke. I think everybody in the country knows who this guy is. Just like looks like your average balding white guy. Can he stop just like touching his hair, right? Like, did that annoy you too? Like, okay, stop with like the trying to hide the receding hairline, man, and just embrace it.
I do the same thing. So,
okay, yeah. I'm definitely balding too. All right, so he's 6'5", a two guard. I think he's pretty squarely pegged in that role. I mean, he's a wing, obviously. 195 pounds, a 6'5" wingspan. So he's a square, right? He's a whatever that term is. He's a box. Well, yeah, he has like the same wingspan as he does the height. So side by side. Anyway, all right, let's get to offensive strengths. Mike, what did you see on the offensive end? Just kind of don't go through everything necessarily, and we'll just kind of go back and forth until we've exhausted our lists.
Well, I think first off, you have to go with this pump fake. He might have the best pump fake, like head fake in college basketball. Mm. And he really uses that to his advantage because he's such a great shooter. Could make shots off the dribble from pretty much anywhere because he shoots almost sideways. It really helps him get off a shot pretty quickly. He has a really like compact, quick release. He gets in the paint a lot because of the pump fakes and the head fakes and all that, and then starts pivoting around, gets guys off their feet, has a really good touch around there. He's pretty ambidextrous. So he has like a bunch of like little scoring skills and instincts that he's really, really high level at for a player his age.
Okay, so I think you and I maybe have approached this slightly differently. This is a nuance of the way that I do it that I think is probably wrong, and I'll have to figure this out next season on how to change it. When I'm talking about offensive strengths, like we're talking about things that he is good at on offense. And everything you just listed was totally correct. Like those are definitely his strengths on offense. Now, like, so sometimes I get kind of in this mode where I'm thinking about it as in like, what are his NBA offensive strengths? You know, like what is actually going to translate? Like what is good about his game from like a pro scouting perspective, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know if necessarily you did that, or you think that all of those things that you just talked about, like the head fake and all that, what's the word that I'm looking for? Craft. All the craft that he has, the footwork that he has, all that kind of pivoting in the lane, like Manu Ginobili style. Not that he's Manu Ginobili. I shouldn't make comparisons.
Yeah.
So do you think that those are NBA strengths for him?
Like highly likely not, but I think there's a chance.
Okay. Yeah. I think you're right. I think he's not going to be able to get away with that kind of stuff most of the time, but there are going to be times when he does, right? When maybe somebody a little bit smaller is guarding him, when there's like an advantageous switch, something like that, when it's a little bit chaotic, he gets an offensive rebound or a turnover, something like that, he can use that really well. All right, so the other offensive, the main offensive strength that I saw that's just like maybe just the most obvious one, and we don't really need to talk about it, but he's a shooter, right? Like that's floor spacing is what he's going to bring. In Andrew Johnson's three-point percentage projection models, Kennard is like one of the highest, or if not the highest of the top prospects in the draft at like 38%, and he's kind of projected to take like, you know, 5 point something of them per game at that clip, at that efficiency, is obviously really good. Now, will he get to take six threes, five threes at the NBA level on average per game? Probably not.
That's per 40 minutes, so, you know.
Okay, so per 40 minutes, I don't think... Well, I guess maybe. I guess if it's per 40, yeah, right? Because the percentage of shots he's going to be taking on the floor. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I actually don't know if that's... Yeah, it must be per 40. Good call. Good call, Mike. Thanks. Yeah, that's probably the rate at which he'll take stuff, if not more, right? Because he'll probably just be stuck out there even more than he was in college. That's a great point. I think that his release is so, so quick. That's the thing that I didn't realize about Kennard. I kind of just pegged him as like this unathletic, blah, 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 whatever. And that's fine. But he seems like that kind of guy in high school, the kid that was good at every sport, super, super coordinated, that just kind of got everything. He has like a generally pretty good feel on offense. He did this move a lot where he would kind of get the ball and there would be a slight closeout, right? Like not like a real, real closeout, but a slight closeout. He would be in triple threat and he would kind of, you know, do his little dance, whatever. Then he would go left. He's left-handed. He would go left and then somehow gather both feet under him, like a couple feet inside the three-point arc, and go and rise above his defender, who was oftentimes more athletic, oftentimes longer than he is. But it would be like an uncontested shot. It was incredible to me how quick it was, how balanced it was, how it was unaffected where you think that it should have been affected because of just the quickness and the height that he gets to really, really quickly. The speed of his release, all of that is really good and also very consistent. Like from the legs down, his shot preparation on curls, on catch and shoot situations, like I said, just off the dribble, that kind of created stuff, really consistent, really good from almost every range. Now, when he starts getting out a little bit past NBA range, his footwork is like gets to changes a little bit, but everybody's does, right? It's a power thing, obviously. But his shooting is super, super impressive. Like that's real. If he's going to stick in the league, it's because of that. So what else on the offensive end, if you have anything else?
First of all, I completely agree. I have like almost word for word, like you were saying, like the same notes exactly. But I think the two things. Oh, and also I wanted to say that my model, obviously I'm not Andrew Johnson. And also what's it called? Adjusted to like average. What is it called? Regresses it. He regresses his numbers. So 38% is really high on his, but on mine, Kennard is the highest also. And he's like 42 or some shit like that. Yeah. Something like that. Sorry. the one thing I would slightly disagree with, I think he's a little bit more than just a shooter. Like he could actually handle a little bit and like he's, what they say, deceptively quick. So like he'll get to his spots. I think obviously in the NBA, he's not going to be anywhere near primary option, but just with that head fake and his ability to shoot, I think he could drive closeouts a little bit and he could hit shots off the dribble. He doesn't have to be like set or he doesn't have to like, you know, just catch off a screen and shoot right away. I think he could like handle a little bit and he's a little bit more of a scorer than just a shooter. That's what I just think that.
Yeah, I'm worried about, like, I'm not sure about that at all. So I kind of didn't put it in offensive strengths or offensive weaknesses. I think that he doesn't really create almost ever good separation. If he's doing anything, it's because of like that quick release I talked about. Or if he's doing it at the rim, it's because he's like pivoting 1,000 times and he's kind of reaching around and has really good touch. And I'm not sure how much of that garbage is really going to work at the NBA level, especially when guys are stronger and longer and the help is just a little more polished from like super long bigs. I'm not sure that he's going to be able to score reliably in any other way unless it's like an obvious scenario at the rim, you know, because he's a good cutter. That's one of the other things. I'll just get to a few other things offensively. In the pick and roll, I think he's actually pretty decent. Like he has the ability to stay really patient, to use his body to shield defenders well, even if he's double teamed. His passes are as quick as his stroke. He doesn't make great reads. There are probably like a handful of really consistent reads that he does, but he does them all really well. Because he's 6'5", he could pass over the top really consistently in college. Now that won't necessarily be the case. So I'll be interested to see like how often he's actually making good passes, like, you know, to the roll man, kind of just, he's able to be really patient and wait for that window and then do so really, really quickly over the top of the defense, like a lot. He did that a lot. There weren't a ton of other kinds of passes that he really excelled at. So I'll be interested to see if he has like kind of those pocket passes, the one-handed stuff off the dribble that are really important right now in the NBA, all that kind of stuff. I'll be interested to see if he can do that kind of stuff. But the passing that he did do was fine. I thought the fact, like, his handle isn't great, but he really didn't get sped up. He didn't get flustered by pressure. Excuse me. And I thought that, like, those qualities are good, if just for the fact that it shows, like, a lot of awareness and a lot of just kind of, like, maybe feel. I hate just using that word over and over, but the good feel that he has on offense that's just going to facilitate, kind of lubricate a little bit more good sets in the NBA. Because coming off screens, he's really good at kind of just making his man do, like, the little things, you know, using his screener in ways that are good, shielding with his body, all that kind of stuff, cutting. I think he's particularly good at that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I just think overall on offense, it's just a really, really good feel. I don't know if there's anything, any, like, creation potential there. I think probably not at all. But there's some opportunity in pick-and-roll scenarios where he's just going to, like, you know, the threat to shoot is there. So you have to go over the top. You have to – the big has to come up a little bit, and maybe he's able to make that pass. And defenses can adjust to that, obviously. But, all right, if there's nothing else there in offensive strengths, you can just reply to whatever I said if you disagree, or just move on to offensive weaknesses.
Let's just go to offensive week. I had a little bit, but whatever. Okay. Players. Obviously players with excellent burst like Fox or Smith are usually helped by the spacing in the NBA. For Kennard, his ability to recognize gaps on D, I'm not sure how much of that will really work at the next level with the athletes like we're saying. Yeah. And I doubt like he'll get any shots at the rim or anything. Obviously there's not much elevation on his half-court layup attempts or anything. No one in the NBA is going to be falling for those pump fakes and pivot moves that he draws contact on. He gets stuck in pick and roll at times because he's just not quick enough and can't really create an advantage if he's not able to, quickly rise up like we were talking about. He kind of just starts pivoting around and has nowhere to go, especially against more athletic defender. And yeah, just he's not athletic enough and doesn't have the physical tools, I think, to really have a lot of his best skills translate the way you would like.
Yeah, I think, I agree with everything you said. I peppered in a little bit of stuff about his handle that's a little bit weaker and creating separation, all that stuff kind of when I was talking about offensive strengths. So we can just move on now to defensive weaknesses. Or to defensive strength, excuse me, where, if any, I know we were kind of talking about there might not be a lot of stuff in this category here, but what can we say that Kennard is good at on defense?
The one thing I found, you said you found two things, so you're better than me, but he has fairly
maybe I'm just
quick
wrong, right?
Maybe. He has pretty quick hands, like digging down on drives versus post players or like, guarding somebody one-on-one. Sometimes he'll strip guys. But that's about all I saw as far as strength.
Well, it was really interesting to watch these Duke games for both of these players. And we'll get to Jackson, obviously. But the comparison here is really, really interesting. Frank Jackson is quick, powerful. So the kinds of like physical attributes that you think would make a good on-ball defender. Whereas Kennard on ball, I actually think right now, like this may change, but right now Kennard I think is a little bit better on ball. He's weaker and like, you know, he's neither of them are good. Let's just say that. Okay. But Kennard's anticipation is just so much better. Like we raved about Thornwell a ton, right? For like what we talked about for like 40 minutes or something like that. Right. And we talked so much about this amazing anticipation he has, although his foot speed isn't necessarily De'Aaron Fox level or Frank Jackson level, but Kennard has, for as slow as he is, he stays in front of guys, I think, pretty well. Now, I will say that he was almost never on the other team's best creator. He was always, almost always being hidden on somebody who wouldn't be put in a pick and roll, somebody who was just usually put in like the weak side corner or the strong side corner, and Kennard was just like, hey, basically rest and just sit there. So now I'm already getting into like defensive weaknesses and blah, blah, blah. But there weren't a ton of like possessions where you can really talk about Kennard, you know, on ball defense, blah, blah, blah. Most of the time it wasn't good necessarily, but his anticipation was there enough to where I was surprised at how much he was cutting guys off more than I thought he should have. Now, I basically echo the other thing that you saw. So let's just get kind of into weaknesses here. He dies on screen, so they basically just keep him out of every screen and roll opportunity that they can. They hide him, right, in that scenario. So he dies on that kind of stuff. He offers almost nothing on the defensive rebound, like defensive rebound wise, unless it's just like a tiny bit of craft. He like rotations. He's often like a rotation behind, will kind of just be caught in nowhere, kind of just bending over. You know, he doesn't commit super well on help situations, right? So like, get all the way to your help position, or stay on the guy on the perimeter. Don't just float in the middle, kind of in this place where you can't be effective to either one. You can't react effectively to either one. So many times he kind of just like fake rotated down to the weak side block, and he would basically just be boxed out for like an easy offensive rebound, and he would give some like fake hustle, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, on off ball, he's not great there, obviously. Any other defense weaknesses that you saw?
First of all, I want to say that thing you just described where you kind of get stuck in no man's land and doesn't commit to the help situation. There's got to be like a term for that, because I always try to describe that and it's like so many words to describe that. It should be like a way to
say
it.
All right, let's do it right now. What is it? Like, what is no man's land? I'm trying to think of like a reference. I don't know. We'll come back. We'll think of something good and we'll come back.
Yeah, we'll think of it. But his defensive awareness is really poor, surprisingly, like for the most part, and like he doesn't show a lot of effort, because like on offense, like we're talking about, he's a pretty good feel and everything, but on defense it doesn't seem to be the same way. And like you said, they're always hiding him, but like for example in the Kansas game, he ended up on Josh Jackson for a couple plays. Right away Kansas went to Jackson in the post and two like lay-ins basically. Like has short arms, super weak, that I think makes him really hard to play in the NBA. I think even some of the like worst NBA players that you could hide him on will probably be able to take advantage of him pretty easily.
Yeah, I think you're right. And let's just say that there, like it is impressive. His hands are impressive, right? So there is like, there's something there, and it's obviously, you can see that kind of coordination and everything on offense too. Like a lot of his skills are predicated on that. Reaching in, he should have a foul rate way higher than he already does. He reaches in a ton. That's like his go-to thing after he's been beat on some drive, right? Pounded in to the goal, and the guy tries to rise above him, and he can't react because it's not an explosive athlete, and he's kind of already on his heels. He reaches in, and he gets more strips than you think. So that's good. But you're right. Everything else is pretty bad. NBA fit. What do we think his role is? How is he going to fit? Where do you kind of see him in a rotation, if at all?
Well, he could shoot the heck out of the ball. So, and like I said, I think he could even, I don't think he'll get all the way to the basket, but as far as like head fake and take a couple dribbles to the free throw line, or like get a little floater, you know, from like 12 feet or something, I think he could do stuff like that a little bit, especially against bench units and stuff like that. So definitely like just like a scoring, shooting, you know, offensive efficiency punch off the bench, sort of. I think he could provide that. He could pass a little bit too. I think hopefully if things work out fairly well for him, I think he'll be like an eighth or ninth man on some team and giving them a little bit of that offensive punch.
Yeah, interesting. I can't really add anything. I think that's perfectly fine. So where do you think he's going to be drafted, and then where do you have him?
Well, he's pretty high right now. I'm not the best in anticipating where guys will actually get taken, but somewhere in the teens, it seems like, especially with the need for wings. We saw when we did the mock draft on my pod how the bigs fell. So he'll probably get taken somewhere in the teens. I have him at the end of the 20s, like around number 30 or like 20, between 25 and 30.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think I have him like, 22 to 29, something like that. I have him in there. And really, more realistically, I could see him going anywhere like in the last 10 picks, or at least I think he should go in the last 10 picks of the first round, the first 10 picks of the third, or of the second round, excuse me. But yeah, like you said, we're not insiders. We don't really like know where he's going to be picked. That basically, I probably shouldn't ask this question. We should just go to Draft Express and just say where Draft Express has him, right? Although I know they're like a little bit higher on him because Mike Schmitz is crazy high on him, but right now, let me just see really quickly. I know this is crazy boring podcasting, but I'm scrolling down, and they have him at 12. I could edit this out, but that's a little more, so we're not going to. Sorry, listeners. Kennard is at 12 right now, and obviously they're the best at doing mocks, and this can change from now until Thursday, but somewhere in the teens, like that makes sense. I wouldn't be surprised if he slides, but I also wouldn't be surprised if he goes maybe even like a few picks higher than that, just because somebody falls in love with his shooting and thinks that maybe they can teach him defense or hide him or blah, 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 any of that stuff. All right. Let's get to Frank Jackson. Somebody that I hadn't really paid attention to, although, you know, we all watch Duke a ton during the year, obviously. Their games are maybe more accessible than anybody else's besides Kentucky, maybe more so than Kentucky. And, but I was always focusing on Tatum basically, or like trying to get a glimpse of Giles or something. Right. And Emile Jefferson, it's like hard not to watch him when he's playing. He's such a good player, such an interesting player. All right, so But going back and looking at him, like, I was really, really intrigued. And on Mike's podcast, I actually drafted him at the bottom of the first, kind of way higher than I think I was. I would have slotted him at the beginning of the year, where kind of the buzz about him was. And I think that he is rising a bit due to a little bit of like a really, really impressive combine showing. Was like top three in a lot of like the jump stuff and all that kind of stuff. So he is he's a freshman for Duke, like I said. He plays the point guard for them. He's probably just better positioned as just a guard. He might be a one if you're just asking him to bring the ball past half court. That's fine. But he's not going to initiate a lot of your sets in the NBA, especially in the NBA. He's definitely going to be off ball. And, you know, ideally, you could probably have him guard in the point of attack. So he's just a guard. 6'3", 208 pounds. Like, he's a pretty strong kid. A 6'7" and a half wingspan. He doesn't look particularly long, but functionally, I think he plays pretty long. And maybe that just has to do with, you know, college guys are shorter, especially on the perimeter at the point guard position and the two position. But he plays longer, I think, than a lot of people. It seems like he avoids a lot of shot blocking. He's above everybody else, and maybe that's just because of his jump. But I think he played long, for whatever that means. All right, so let's start with offensive strengths. Mike, what do you think are his offensive strengths? And maybe you can kind of just speak to a little bit how his narrative has kind of changed over the year and how his play has changed. Because going back and watching games at the beginning and watching games like in the ACC tournament, he's changed a lot.
Really, you think so? I don't know. He was the same player that I saw in high school, pretty much, in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously, everybody improves as they get older, and especially at that age, they're improving fairly rapidly. So I think he polished up some skills, like shooting especially. He got a lot better from high school. But from the beginning of the year, I don't think it was a huge difference. I think definitely his biggest strength would obviously be on offense. He's probably, in my opinion, the best functional offensively athlete in the draft, outside maybe like Fox, and maybe Smith is close. I'm not sure about Smith. Is not always great at using his athleticism on offense. But yeah, I think he's definitely up there, like top five at least, offensive athlete, super explosive, really fast, strong frame. And yeah, he could blow by guys in closeouts or in pick and roll. And that just gives him like excellent scoring potential as like a secondary handler, because he could shoot as well. Yeah, that's, I think, his main offensive strength.
It's interesting that you say that he didn't change. To my eyes, maybe it's just a role thing. Like, maybe he's doing the same thing just at in less minutes. But it seemed like later in the year, they were asking him to handle the ball a little more. He was playing over Grayson Allen like a lot more later. So maybe you're right. Maybe he hasn't changed that much. It was just a role thing. The shooting, right. Obviously, like you said, off the dribble, he doesn't do it a ton. But like a lot of his shots are assisted if they're jump shots. I could tell you the percentage at Hoop Math, but just trust me, like, it's high, right? But at the rim, it's not very, very assisted. So like you said, driving, obviously, just like his first step is super explosive. He's not great at like just changing speeds on a dime, like a lot of kind of deceptive point guards are at the NBA. But he'll have like a tiny hang dribble, or he'll just get it in a position where he's got like a little bit of an advantage on you, and then he can just explode past you. And it's a little bit breathtaking to watch. Like, I very much enjoyed watching Frank Jackson. Now, once he gets to the rim, it's a little bit of a different story, especially if he's going with his left hand. But I thought just kind of his handle going left was better than I thought. Just considering, like, overall his handle isn't great. But, like, going left, it was definitely just as good as going right. And going right, like, I think he finishes, like, pretty well. I saw some pretty nice finishes right. So you talked about earlier trying to find some kind of term for – you know, like not committing to like help and really not staying on your guy. So there's another term that I thought of. Oh shoot, I'm totally blanking. It's in my notes and it's highlighted. Okay, here we go. A term that we should use, because I've tried to explain this, and maybe you'll tell me, Sean, there's already a term for this. But I've tried to explain so many times on all my podcasts, I find myself stumbling over the thing that players do when they're driving. And it often happens in Eurosteps, but it's not exactly the same thing. It's not the sidestep. It's like where you plant and you slow down. And the help defender, his timing is off, right? And he'll fly by you. Sometimes he just won't jump exactly right. So you'll get a little bit of hesitation and then you can explode, especially if you're a good 2-foot leaper like Jackson is. So I'm just going to call that the plant step. And and you'll just know what I mean, right? It's kind of like in football when you're like you're cutting, right? And you plant, like a kick returner is going, right? And he plants and the kicker flies by him, who's the last line of defense, and then he can go score the touchdown. So Jackson like had a bunch of these where he would explode, and then he right before he goes to jump off, he would plant that last foot really hard. And he's already so far in front of his own defender, and the help man would either fly by or, like I said, his timing would be off enough to where Jackson had like really, really good open looks at the rim. That kind of stuff is super impressive. Now, there's not a ton else that you didn't mention and that I didn't just mention just now. There's offensive strengths. If you don't have anything else to add, let's just go into offensive weaknesses.
No, let's go. Yeah, that's it.
All right, go for it.
I think he obviously lacks vision and just like feel as far as playmaking for others, especially. Like you were saying, his handle isn't super advanced. He does go to the left, but he's not very comfortable finishing when he goes left. Not only is a passer, but even driving, like he runs into guys a lot despite his quickness. Doesn't really move very much off ball. Usually he's seen standing around if he doesn't have the ball. So yeah, just like IQ and polish is pretty poor for him right now. And it's been that way for a while, and it's pretty low for, especially the size. You kind of worry about it. With his great athleticism, if he was able to learn like pick and roll reads, I think he could be a pretty effective NBA player. But he's so far away right now that I don't think he'll ever get there, probably, unfortunately.
Yeah, I could go on and on about how many times he just missed like where the defense was rotating from. Like just on the backside, if you just have him going like right to left, right with the ball in his left hand going around a pick, and he gets double teamed off that, which he would often do. Either he's trying to split that and it's like a, I don't know, a 50-50 gamble that he's going to turn that over, or he's just going to like run really fast around that hedging big, that doubling big, and he's going to just pass it to the next guy in the perimeter, right? Like he's never looking in the backside. He's never really, really looking for the roll man with any kind of like timing, like you said. Yeah, I could go on and on about that pick and roll thing, but yeah, he definitely lacks just a lot of vision and kind of feel for that. He's often just going too fast, you know? Like this is definitely like, well, this is like how I play without any of the athleticism. I have no like feel. It would be like, yeah. Anyway, we don't have to go down that road. Like maybe later we can do like a mock scouting report of my game. It'll be really pathetic. But all right. So other offensive weaknesses that I'm trying to think about: off the dribble shooting is bad. I don't know that I really touched on enough the offensive strengths. The catch and shoot three that he has, really good. He actually floats to space really well. Off other guys cutting, and that's something that you don't see with everybody, and with somebody that kind of lacks the feel that he has, that's something that's actually really, really encouraging that he might have some feel going on. And getting back to weaknesses, I lost my place. Oh yeah, just on that catch and shoot shot, I think it's really, really consistent, and he gets it off like pretty quick. But yeah, that's pretty good. And he shot like 39% from that. And he took like 44% of his overall field goals from three. So it was like a decent amount of attempts. Like I didn't see in Andrew Johnson's projections that he released that he even did it on Jackson. I'd be interested to see kind of what those were, but he was good from the free throw line. His attempt rate wasn't like super, super high, but I bet he projects to be decent in the NBA, especially from the corners. Like if you're just going to put him in the corner and he's just going to be able to attack closeouts and shoot the three, that makes a lot of sense. And that would be a perfect role for him if his defensive strengths aligned with a player that would justify those kind of minutes. But unfortunately, I don't think they do. So let's get to the defensive side. Defensive strengths, what did you see there?
Just real quick on my thing, he projects pretty good, especially for his age. He's
okay.
High,
so. Cool.
Yeah. So yeah. Let me get back to this. Defensive strength. I think one-on-one D, he's pretty solid just because he's such a great athlete. In particular, in the NC State game, the one guy Dennis Smith could not be one-on-one is Jackson. And like at the end of the game, they were literally like subbing Jackson just to guard Smith. So yeah, Smith scored most of his points on switches and like in transition. He has like Jackson has the strength in the frame to even switch a lot maybe and not get killed in the NBA. Like maybe guard some twos and like at threes at times. Like guys are not gonna just back him down easily.
Right.
So that and the, like I said, the athletic ability, like individual D, definitely is a strength for him defensively.
Yeah, he basically just has like physical tools for the strengths. I saw almost nothing else that was encouraging. So let's just get to the weaknesses. What did you see there?
Yeah. Well, like you pretty much said, poor positioning. Doesn't really understand Team D very well. Weak instincts and awareness. His technique is pretty poor at times. We'll get through the screen, but he'll like end up upright and he'll lose his balance and just get beat like that. Gets lost off ball all the time. His stock steals and blocks really well. Looking at his numbers, the two best players he compared to were like Doug McDermott and Devin Booker. But both of those guys are a lot bigger and, you know, like pure shooter type of players, even though he wasn't a bad shooter either. But yeah. He's a lot more athletic than both. So despite his athleticism being very functional with the ball in his hands on offense, on defense, it's not functional at all.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that. I hadn't thought about it in that way. That might be true. I don't know. I'll have to go back and think about it. But I thought it was just basically due to like this lack of anticipation. Guys have one like little dribble move, and he was all over the place. Like there's just no sense of fluidity and change of direction and kind of anticipation and moving in front of the guy, despite what we know are like is the quick first step that he has and the strength that he has. There was no kind of feel for staying in front of guys and taking the appropriate angle. So many times he would be playing off guys way too far. He would give up way too much space for like no reason at all. And then sometimes he would just like overreact to one little move and get blown by. And I was just, I don't know, it was really dumbfounding, honestly, because his motor is fine, right? It looks like he's trying hard. But there's nothing there that was tangible, nothing like effective really at all. And it's completely discouraging because like, what do you do with that? You know, this guy who has some potential on offense to stick him in the corner, attack closeouts, has NBA athleticism. There's no doubt about that. But if you don't have any feel on defense and you're like a massive liability there, if you're a guard, right? Like almost every guard in the NBA offensively has a crossover, has a hang dribble. Like to some degree, like they're just going to abuse this guy. And there's not a screen that he saw that he didn't die in. Like, I don't understand. And it wasn't like a switch thing. It wasn't like, oh, hey, I need to body up this big because I'm going to switch on him, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't any of that. It was, I don't choose to go over or under. I will just stop in this guy. And it was unconscionable. Like, I don't understand. He's not like a low character guy. Doesn't seem to be super dumb necessarily. His motor's fine, right? Like, it seems like the kind of guy who would fight well over screens or at least just go under stuff, right? Like get around it somehow. We just died in everything. It was super discouraging because I loved watching him on offense. And I still think that he has some upside. And I know I've said this a billion times, but my philosophy is the farther you go down in the draft, the more you should kind of take flyers on guys like this for one reason or another, either high IQ guys who are unathletic or super athletic guys who have low IQ. You know, you should just take swings on guys lower because, you know, guys that are picked lower don't project to like do anything anyway. So what's the point of taking a guy who projects to do nothing anyway? So I still think you should draft this guy at the end of the first, but he would be what? Would he be like better than Donovan Mitchell if he had like Donovan Mitchell's point of attack instincts?
Yeah, he's kind of like Mitchell with no instincts. I think like you said, he might be even more skilled than Mitchell. If he had the feel and the instincts, he might be even a better player. It's probably a little more athletic than Mitchell, even though it's close. Mitchell's really athletic too. That's an interesting comparison. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Frank Jackson. I remember when you asked me who my favorite players, he's probably like one of my favorite players, like just as a fan, because I love speed. I love like guys like that could really use their speed a lot in actually in the game and stuff. But like you said, his understanding the game is just really poor. And I think a lot of his defensive struggles have to do with his technique defensively. It's kind of like he always ends up like upright or like loses balance or something.
Yeah,
and just,
yeah.
Yes. And it's weird because like, he's played AAU ball forever. So you would think he'd learn it by now. But for some reason, it just hasn't clicked for him in that sense. It's weird.
Yeah, that is. It does seem very weird. Anyway. All right. So NBA projections, like what do you think his role is going to be? Do you think he like can be a rotation player? And then where do you think he'll be drafted? Basically, just like tell us where like you've seen him in mocks, and then where would you draft him?
I think he's about the same in mocks and where I have him like in the beginning of the second round. He had some hype, like you said, after the combine, but I think he like broke his foot or something like that. I don't know if he broke it, but he had like some foot injury. So he hasn't been able to work out as much, unfortunately, for him. So he's like in a lower, in the start of the second round, both for me and most mocks. And I think that's a good spot for him. I'm not sure. I think he's a little bit of a risky player as far as his projection for role. I think he could, like we talked about, there is a small chance somehow things just click and he really works out. But I think he could also easily end up just, you know, sticking around for a couple years and then bouncing around in Europe somewhere or something like that.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. It just depends on like how well he can defend, basically. I think it just basically comes down to that. And offensively, obviously, he'll never be really given the ball and asked to create. But if you could pair him with, you know, theoretically, if you could pair him with a guard who's a good creator on a second unit who can create but not play a lot of defense, you know, you think this guy, maybe he could play some defense and take the other team's best one or two, maybe a three, like maybe if he's not super long. I don't know. I just, I struggle to see like how he's going to get a lot of minutes. I think you're right. He's definitely intriguing, and I would take a flyer on him, but I think odds are that, you know, he won't pan out, and that's fine. And I, like you said, in that kind of transition between the second and the first and the second round is where a lot of people peg him, probably further down, like in the top 10 picks in the second round. And I would take him probably at the end of the last five picks of the first five picks of the second, something like that. I think probably where he belongs. So yeah. Anything else, Mike, any other thoughts that you have in the draft? Like just anything recently that you kind of wanted to get out there?
Just real quick about Jackson, I'll say one thing, like as a positive thing for him is a lot of times like really athletic point guards that are young and kind of unpolished struggle in college because of the way the college game is, like with the spacing and all that. Sometimes guys like that really work out, like Eric Bledsoe is a comparison that comes to mind really quickly. Not to say Jackson is the next Bledsoe, but things could work well for him. I don't want to be like all negative about him. He does have some high end, well, relatively high end potential. But otherwise, I don't know. I'm good.
All right. Mike, do you have anything to plug?
Just my big board on Alto. We're trying to put a really great draft website for you guys. I think we could end up having some of the best draft content out there if we hopefully get everybody together. The three-headed beast, Ghidorah. And I'll drop our stuff over there. So go to oldtoten.com, check out my big board, check out Kaiser's big board. And that's about it. Good night.
All right, man. Thanks. See you later.